By lunchtime, Mac and Sarah had collected soil samples from more than a dozen different locations. Traveling a course southwest of the camp, they planned on circling around the valley until they had covered one quarter of its perimeter before returning to camp. It would take another 3 or 4 days to fully sample the valley, but this first batch would go a long way toward preparing her report. The ride in the ATUV was rough and was not helped by Mac's aggressive driving style.
"Could you please take it easy, Mac?" Sarah pleaded.
"Not if you want to get back in time for dinner."
Mac pulled his foot off the accelerator pedal as the vehicle crested a small rise. He already learned from previous experience not to go over such rises too quickly, lest the vehicle become airborne. As they came over the top, the ground suddenly flattened out for a few meters before dipping down again. Mac pulled the ATUV to a stop at the edge of the decline. Stretched out before them was a long, flat plain, a depression that sat about 4 or 5 meters lower than the surrounding area. This plain was different than the rest of the valley, with a strange variety of plants scattered across its expanse. Most of the ground was the customary tan color found throughout the valley, but there were patches of grays and rusty reds scattered everywhere. There were also dozens of small ponds of dirty, stagnant water littered throughout the depression.
"Wow!"
Sarah exclaimed as she stood up in her seat to gaze at the depression below.
"What the hell?"
Mac had never seen anything like it, not even in his environmental classes in school.
"Look at this," Sarah called to him excitedly. "I've never seen anything like this. It looks like a dried-up swamp."
"Where did the water come from?"
"I don't know. Maybe from rain?"
"It hasn't rained for weeks, Sarah."
"Yeah, but maybe we landed just after this area's rainy season? A lot of the water would have evaporated by now. That would explain all the ponds."
"Maybe so."
"Let's get down there. I can't wait to take some samples of this."
They drove down the hill and out onto the floor of the depression. The ground felt different under the ATUV's wheels. It seemed harder, more compact. All Sarah cared about was that the ride was much smoother, a fact for which her bladder was quite thankful. They drove across the depression, winding their way between the clumps of plants and ponds. Although it had a unique beauty, Sarah couldn't help but feel there was something wrong.
"I don't get it," Sarah said.
"Don't get what?" Mac wondered.
"These are all saltwater swamp plants."
"How do you know?"
"They're just like the ones in that little marsh at the north end of the beach where we pulled out the last cargo pod."
"There was marsh there?"
"Duh."
"So what's the big deal?"
"If the water came from the rains, these would be freshwater plants, like the ones along the rivers and streams."
She looked at Mac, who wasn't following her line of reasoning.
"So the water here is salty? Big deal."
"Well, where did the salt come from?"
"Duh," Mac said. "The ocean, maybe?"
"What? Did you flunk meteorology or something? Rainwater doesn't have salt in it."
"Yeah, but lots of rocks do. Maybe the subterranean rock here is full of salt."
"Maybe," she conceded.
Maybe he wasn't as dumb as he acted.
"And maybe we should take a deeper sampling here."
"You're the boss,"
Mac said, as he stopped the vehicle.
"Why don't you go ahead and start collecting some topsoil samples while I break out the drilling gear?"
"Okay,"
Sarah agreed as she climbed out of the vehicle. She grabbed her sampling bag out of the back seat and strode off toward the nearest batch of plants. They were tall, nearly chest high, with large cream-white flowers which hung like bells from the plant's yellow-green stalks. Vibrant red stems protruded from the center of the flowers, 3 or 4 in each, ending in little spirals with a bluish ball of pollen at the ends. They were surrounded with swamp grass that stood about knee-high, its dark green blades in sharp contrast to the yellow stalks of the neighboring plants. The plants seemed to be clustered on large mounds of tan-colored soil. The gray and rust-colored ground she was walking on crunched beneath her feet as she walked toward the flowering mound, and she doubted that anything would grow in it. Sarah knelt down on the edge of the pile and opened up her bag, pulling out a long, tubular sample spike. Made of metal, the spike resembled an unusually large hypodermic needle, pointed and blade-like at the tip, hollow through its length. She affixed a handle onto its blunt end, parted the grass to expose the topsoil, and plunged the spike into the soil, all the way up to the handle joint. With a slight twist, she carefully withdrew the sample spike from the ground, leaving a 5-centimeter diameter hole in the ground. Being careful not to contaminate the sample by touching it with her fingers, she cautiously placed the soil-filled spike back into its container, disconnected the handle, and closed its lid tightly. She meticulously labeled the sample, including the time, date, location, and conditions from where it was taken, before storing the sample in her bag. When she got back to the lab, she would mechanically remove the long pellet of soil to be analyzed using the lab's many scanning devices. When she returned to the ATUV, she found Mac had assembled the drilling apparatus and was ready to begin.
"Where would you like to start?" he asked.
"Right here should be fine."
Mac pointed the long drill tip to the ground, holding it upright. The tip was similar to that of the sample spike, but its cutting edge was spiraled around the hollow core. Mac gripped the drill motor handle tightly, expecting considerable resistance from the rocky surface, but when he started the motor, he was easily able to pass through. The crunchy rock yielded to the drill bit without much back torque, and the drill slid quickly down into the ground. When the motor got down to the ground, Mac stopped, reversed the motor, and powered it back out.
"That looked easy enough," Sarah commented.
"Yeah, too easy."
Mac detached the motor from the tube and placed it on the ground. Then he detached the drill bit from the tube. Sarah laid the sample tube on the ground next to Mac, who laid the tube down next to it. After releasing the retaining rings at each end of the drill tube, he swung the tube open, revealing the meter-long pellet of sample he had just removed from the ground.
"Wow," Sarah commented. "I didn't expect that."
She examined the sample. Just like the open ground, it had sporadic patches of gray and rust-red colors. It was also considerably porous.
"I'm no geologist," Mac admitted, "but that doesn't look like dirt to me."
"You're right," Sarah agreed, as she violated protocol and removed a small piece of the sample from one end.
It broke apart between her fingers as she squeezed, crunching in the same manner as it did beneath her feet.
"I would swear this is lava rock."
"Like from a volcano?"
"Exactly."
"Hopefully not from a recent one," Mac added.
"Not likely," Sarah answered.
She had studied the initial scans of the planet that were made by the flyby probe 2 years ago. They had shown very little volcanic activity, none of which were anywhere near this area. She stood up, brushing the lava dust from her hands as she looked around.
"This whole depression must have been one big lava flow," she theorized. "That tall peak to the southeast must have been a volcano a few million years ago."
Sarah pulled out her canteen and took the lid off.
"The question is, how did all these dirt mounds get here?"
"Beats the hell out of me," Mac shrugged.
"Well, that's not for us to figure out, at least not now."
Sarah took a drink from her canteen.
"Let's head to the far side and get some more samples before we head west along the mountain base."
"Sounds good,"
Mac agreed, as he picked up the drilling gear. A few minutes later, they were back in the ATUV, heading across the depression to the far side along the southern base of the mountains.
"You know,"
Sarah yelled, over the sound of the lava rock crunching beneath the weight of the ATUV's oversized wheels,
"it's really quite perplexing how anything could grow out here."
"Why do you say that?"
Mac shouted back.
"I've seen video footage of lava flows back on Earth. They plow over everything, trees, plants, buildings, even some rocks. It destroys everything in its path. Those plants shouldn't be able to grow here."
"Yeah, I saw those videos as well. But there were plants growing on the hardened lava flows as soon as a few years later, if I remember correctly."
"Yeah, but not saltwater swamp plants," she reminded him.
About 2/3 of the way across the depression, Sarah asked him to stop for another, deeper soil sample. Again, she collected from a nearby mound, while Mac drilled into the lava rock.
"You know," Sarah said as she returned, "we should probably take a water sample from one of the ponds while we're out here. It might help to solve the riddle as to how all this came about."
"Good idea," he agreed, as he put the drilling equipment back into the ATUV.
"I think there's a pond about half a click west of us."
"Half a click, huh?"
Mac smiled at her use of the lingo he taught her on their first outing together weeks ago.
"Lead on, Chief,"
he teased. As she led the way, Sarah realized that her day with Mac hadn't been as bad as she anticipated. She had no idea why, but he was far less abusive than usual.
Could it be that Mac was maturing?
She felt that was unlikely. Maybe he was beginning to understand what she had been preaching to the others. Whatever the reason, she was just thankful he wasn't being as much of a jerk. It took them about 15 minutes to reach the pond. It was of moderate size, maybe 10 meters across. The water was dark and muddy, swirling with small bits of lava dust from the ground underneath. There were many varieties of aquatic plant life, of different sizes, shapes, and colors, growing in and around the pond, but none of them resembled anything she had seen before on this world.
"This is kind of eerie," Mac observed.
"What do you mean?"
"I know we're on an alien planet and all, but this seems really alien to me. You know?"
"Yeah, it is different."
Sarah bent down at the water's edge, picking up the stalk of a dead plant to stir the water with it. The particles in the water swirled together, grays and blacks hardly visible in the murky fluid.
"It looks almost like a thick soup, doesn't it?"
Mac handed her the water test kit.
"Not like any soup I ever had."
"You know,"
Sarah joked, while filling the sample container with pond water,
"it looks an awful lot like that vile protein crap you're always swilling down."
"Why does everyone rag on my cream dream?" Mac said defensively. "You know, I had it analyzed back on the Daedalus, and they said it was actually quite healthy."
"Sure, especially if you have no sense of smell."
She enjoyed teasing Mac for a change. She couldn't remember the last time she was able to joke without one of his half-witted comebacks. She held the plastic tube up to the sunlight for inspection. That's when she noticed the moons.
"Oh, my God!" she exclaimed. "Look at the moons!"
Mac looked up to the sky. Luna Proxima was moving in front of Luna Dista at a noticeably faster rate.
"Whoa! Look at that!"
They stood there for a moment, watching as Proxima passed slowly in front of Dista.
"I wonder if the others know about this."
She moved her comset mic down closer to her mouth to call the camp, but something stopped her. A wet sensation at her feet. She looked down and saw the pond water creeping up out of its basin, covering her boots.
"What the hell?"
she said as she stepped back.
"Whoa!"
Mac shouted, noticing the moving pool of water himself. Then something caught his attention. A rumbling sound coming from the nearby mountain base.
"What's that noise?"
Suddenly, the rumbling turned to the sound of water crashing down onto rocks. From a cave at the base of the mountain, only a few hundred meters away, water began spewing forth, spilling out into the depression below.
"Uh-oh,"
was all Mac could say. The water rushed across the depression, and it was moving directly toward them.
"I don't think these ponds were formed by rainwater,"
Sarah realized, her eyes wide at the sight of the oncoming water.
"Let's get out of here,"
Mac yelled, grabbing her hand and pulling her behind him. He almost knocked her over as he pulled her toward the ATUV. He was surprisingly fast for a man of his size, and it took her several steps before she managed to get in sync with his longer strides.
"Wait,"
she exclaimed, pulling at Mac's arm to try and stop him.
"The test kit."
"Forget the test kit,"
Mac yelled, forcing her to follow him. Sarah looked over her shoulder. The water was already reaching the test kit, washing it aside as the flood continued toward them.
"We're not going to make it."
"Keep moving," he ordered. "Don't look back."
They continued to run as fast as they could, Mac almost dragging Sarah behind him. He lowered his own comset mic and began yelling into it as his left hand keyed the mic button on his belt pack.
"Hey, somebody, anybody, help!"
"Mac, What's wrong?
It was Frank's voice on the comm set.
We're on the run. Sector 12. In the depression. There's a flood coming in fast.
What? From where?
From a cave in the base of the mountain,
Mac panted, as they ran the last few meters to the ATUV. The water was less than a meter behind them, lapping at their heels as they ran.
What the? Get to high ground, Mac! Get to high ground!
No shit!
By the time they reached the ATUV, the water was already ankle-deep and rising fast. Mac scooped Sarah up and tossed her into the vehicle with ease, as if she were a child, then jumped into the driver's seat beside her. He stomped on the accelerator pedal, and the vehicle lurched forward with a jerk, throwing Sarah back into her seat as she fumbled to fasten her seatbelt. Water and loose lava rock spewed from the back tires as the vehicle plowed forward through the rising water. Mac spun the vehicle hard to the right, heading in the same direction as the water, in an attempt to get ahead of the flow.
"Where the hell are you going?" she yelled. "The nearest high ground is to the south."
"We'll never make it across. It's coming in too fast. We've got to try to get some distance between us and the water first, and then cut across."
Sarah looked behind them. They were starting to outrun the water, and were on dry land again, but the flood was gaining on them, as they lost time weaving between the mounds of soil and marsh plants. Sarah reached across Mac's lap, feeling across his left thigh for his seatbelt.
"Now's not the time, Sarah,"
Mac teased, despite their desperate situation.
"Your seatbelt, you jerk! I'm trying to find your seatbelt!"
Mac reached down to his left and pulled the belt across his lap, handing the end to Sarah, who buckled it into its receptacle.
"Go over them!"
she yelled, as Mac swerved back and forth between the mounds.
"What?"
"The mounds! Go over them!"
"Yes, ma'am."
Mac brought the wheel back to center and drove straight into the next mound. The ATUV plowed up the side of the mound through the plants, sending white flowers flying in all directions as the vehicle went down the other side. The jolt nearly launched Sarah out of her seat, causing her to tighten down her belt. She grabbed onto the dashboard with her left hand and the roll bar with her right as they hit the next mound. This one was much larger than the last, and it sent them flying up into the air, landing hard on the flat lava rock on the far side.
"Yee-haw!"
Mac screamed as the ATUV bounced up from the impact. Mac adjusted their course to take the next mound head-on, sending them flying at least 2 meters off the deck, landing hard again. Despite her seatbelt, Sarah flailed wildly as they landed. She wondered why she had ever suggested driving over the mounds. She glanced back over her shoulder. The water was still coming, but they were increasing their distance from the leading edge of the flood. They continued on for several minutes, jumping mound after mound, nearly tipping over a few times, when they failed to hit the little hills at just the right angle. Sarah kept checking the water behind them. They were still keeping ahead of the surge, but they were a long way from the western end of the depression.
"We're running out of time," she exclaimed. "We've got to veer south now, or we'll end up trapped against the western wall."
Mac didn't dare look over his shoulder to check Sarah's assessment of the situation. Trusting her instincts, he veered to the left to head southwest instead of due west. Within minutes, the water was licking at their wheels again, ankle-deep in only a few moments. But the surface was still lava rock, and it provided decent traction, even when wet. They plowed through the water toward the edge of the depression. It was only 50 meters away.
"Hurry, Mac! Hurry!"
The rushing water quickly grew deeper, slowing their progress. Muddy water spat from their tires and from the nose of the ATUV as they plowed through the deepening water. Soon, Mac found he had to add continually more left turn to stay on course. With quick glances to his left, he could see that the water was rising too fast.
"We're not going to make it," he cried out. "Hang on!"
He changed course again, turning more to the left to run parallel to the water's course in a last-ditch attempt to reach the ridge before the water washed them away. Sarah screamed in terror as the water quickly rose up and spilled onto the floor of their vehicle. Their speed dropped sharply, and the motor began to die as the water from their wake spilled out over the top of the nose of the vehicle, pouring into the engine compartment through the hood's ventilation ducts. Panic swept through Sarah like a cold wind, the memory of Frank's near drowning suddenly fresh in her mind. Mac swerved to the right to get the water away from the ducts, but it was too late. The engine died completely, still 15 meters from the ridge, as water quickly began to cover the floor of the ATUV.
"Get out! Get out!"
Mac ordered, as he grabbed his survival pack out of the back seat and began climbing toward Sarah. She thought he was crazy, but followed his instructions and jumped into the water. Mac was right behind her and grabbed her around the waist with his right arm, shielding her against the current with his body as he slung the survival pack onto his left shoulder.
"Go! Go! Go!"
he barked, dragging her through the rushing water. As they passed the front edge of the vehicle and stepped into the direct flow of the water, the current nearly knocked them off their feet. The water was already waist deep, the current driving into Mac's backside, its wake climbing halfway up his back before spilling around him. He shielded Sarah from the brunt of the deluge, carefully sidestepping toward the edge of the depression, 10 meters away. He continued leaning backwards into the current as they slowly made their way, step by step, toward the edge of the water, climbing up his back. Sarah clung to Mac, hiding from the water, swirling around them. His bulk was to her advantage, as it blocked the water and formed a low-lying trough in front of him and around her. Each step was more difficult than the last, and Mac kept losing his footing as he fought to keep from being swept away. The water was cold, and Mac could barely feel his legs as he struggled along. The water continued to deepen, and the wake now spilled over his shoulders and poured down on top of Sarah in front of him as she clung to his torso, holding on for dear life. The force of the water shoved the survival pack up against the back of Mac's neck, pushing his head forward, making it difficult to breathe as they inched closer to the edge of the freezing water. Then, just as the water was about to overcome them, the ground under their feet started to slope upward. Mac planted his left foot higher up the slope and pushed himself upwards, dragging Sarah along with him. He repeated the process twice more until he was only waist-deep again, before shoving Sarah up the slope and onto dry land. Sarah crawled up the slope, sputtering and coughing, drenched in dirty gray floodwater. Cresting the top of the slope, she fell to her stomach and rolled over onto her back, cold and exhausted. Mac tossed the pack up onto the top of the grade and stumbled up the incline, collapsing to his knees next to Sarah.
"Are you all right?" he panted.
Sarah couldn't answer. She was still too scared and still breathing too hard to speak. All she could manage was a thumbs-up gesture with her left hand as it lay across her muddy abdomen. Mac turned his head to look at the water. It was still rising.
"Come on, we can't stop now. The water is still rising."
"I can't,"
Sarah whined.
"Yes, you can," Mac barked. "Let's go."
He reached over and grabbed her by the arm, forcing her up off the wet ground as he grabbed his pack with his right hand.
"Don't make me carry you."
Sarah stumbled to her feet as Mac dragged her up. There was no way she was going to let him carry her. The water was no longer lapping at their feet, but Mac's pace was still just as rushed. They made their way across the short stretch of flatland and down the other side, stumbling through a shallow tributary of floodwater that made its way more leisurely down the narrow slough. As they climbed up the hill on the other side, Mac could see that the mountains seemed to turn away from them on either side. He remembered the images he had studied with Tony the night before, the ones from the ARP flights over this area. It was a small canyon, but of an elevation even higher than the rest of the valley. The water would spill into the valley long before it climbed up into this canyon.
"Mac, please," Sarah pleaded.
Her legs hurt, and her feet were still numb from the cold water.
"Just a little further," he urged. "I promise."
Another 20 meters, and they came to the top of the hill. The canyon lay before them, maybe 50 meters across at the mouth, and about 80 meters deep, with vertical cliffs towering above them on either side.
"Okay, that's far enough for now," Mac told her.
Sarah collapsed to the ground, sobbing.
"Frank," Mac panted over the comm set. "This is Mac."
"Mac, what's your status?"
"We made it to high ground," he panted, "but just barely. I think we're safe for now."
"Copy that. Stand by, one."
Mac looked down at Sarah. She was still crying. He knelt down beside her,
putting his arms around her for comfort. "It's okay, Sarah," he whispered softly, as he took off his coat and put it around her. "We're safe." Jack and Will lay there on the rock, resting after their whitewater ordeal.
"What do we do now?"
Will asked, still slightly out of breath. Jack sat up and looked around. The rock they were on was mostly flat across the top, about 10 meters long and 6 meters wide, sitting a meter above the green water rushing past them on either side. He stood up and examined the water, looking about from side to side, shore to shore. "Look," Jack spoke up, noticing the area just beyond the far side of the rock. "The water over there is moving more slowly." He looked farther downstream. "You see that down there?" he pointed, "where the water is rippled?" Will blocked the sun from his eyes with his right hand, looking where Jack was pointing. "It's shallow there."
"How do you know that?"
"That's the same way the water looked when we first entered. The water becomes rippled as it flows over the rocky bottom. It's probably not more than a meter deep all across there." Will scanned the area. The rapid green water next to them curved around the downstream end of the rock to rejoin the main force of the river. Between the main flow and the far shore was a large, slower-moving part of the river, but still well over their heads in depth. But about 30 meters downstream, the ripple started, which, according to Jack, signified shallower waters. Even further, the river formed a nearly still pond along the far shore. "If we can get across this fast water here, we can float downstream and then just stand up and wade the rest of the way across."
"Jack, it's at least 20 meters to the slower water there," Will pointed out, "and then another 10 across that. How are we going to get across?"
"Like I said, we may not have to. The current looks like it will carry us right into the shallow water on the far side down there."
"Looks like?" "No offense, Jack, but your guesses have been less than perfect lately."
"Oh, come on."
"How do you expect to get through that?"
Will asked, pointing at the water rushing alongside the rock they were standing on.
"Neither one of us can swim, remember?"
"We don't have to," Jack reminded him, picking up his backpack. "We can float on these."
"Okay, but how do you propose we get past this water?"
Jack looked around the rock, pacing across its width.
"We get a running start and jump across," he theorized.
Will's mouth fell agape.
"You're kidding, right?"
It was a pointless question. Will already knew the answer.
"It should be easy."
"You're crazy," Will sputtered. "I had my doubts about you when you suggested we hike across this planet, and again when you wanted to climb down that cliff, but now I'm certain. You're insane."
"Well, what do you suggest we do, Will?"
"Wait, I know," Jack raved.
"We can set up camp here and wait for the rest of the colonists to come and rescue us.
Yeah, that's it.
We can fish for dinner, use the fire paste to cook it up. It might be a little cold at night, but what the hell? It's safer than trying to move on, right?"
"Real funny, Jack."
Jack turned away from Will, looking out over the water toward the far shore. Beyond the shore lay a vast mountain range, the last obstacle between them and their best chance of survival. He wanted so badly to get there, to resume command of the mission. His mission. He felt sorry for Will. He hadn't signed up for anything like this. Yet he had stuck it out, following Jack through every scrape along the way.
"I'm sorry, Will. That was uncalled for."
"Don't worry about it," Will assured him. "After all this time following you across the country, I've grown a tougher skin than that."
"Yeah, you're right.
You have," Jack admitted.
"Don't get me wrong, I still think you're crazy."
Will stood up and straightened his jumpsuit.
"But you are right. We can't stay here."
"Great."
Jack picked up his pack and began to put it on, backwards. "And since I'm the crazy one here, I'll go first." Will stepped up to help Jack with his pack.
"Damn right you will."
Jack slipped his arms through the straps, leaving the pack hanging from his shoulders in front of his torso. After securing the strap behind Jack's waist, Will tied the rope around him once more, checking the knot to ensure it was secure.
"Okay, Jack, you're all set."
Jack walked back to the far side of the rock clumsily, the weight of the pack in front of him forcing him to lean back at an unnatural angle. He looked at the rock in front of him. It wasn't entirely flat at all. Rather, it had crags and valleys, making it a fairly uneven surface on which to run. He prayed he wouldn't slip along the way and go tumbling into the river head first.
"Hey, Will?"
Jack asked, as he mentally prepared himself for the leap.
"Yes?"
Will responded, rising to his feet and picking up his pack to move out of the way.
"Who's crazier, the maniac with the crazy ideas, or the nut who follows him?"
Will looked over at Jack, only to see him grinning from ear to ear.
"Interesting question," Will answered, as a smile spread across his own face. "We'll have to ask Maria."
Jack looked around. The sky was clear. The jungle on either side of the river was dense and green, and the water sparkled in the setting sunlight. It was a breathtaking sight. Hopefully, it would not be the last thing he ever saw. Jack looked again at Will. He winked, and then took a deep breath.
"Okay, here goes nothing."
Another deep breath, and he was off, sprinting across the top of the rock at full speed, his arms wrapped around the bouncing pack in front of him. With a mighty leap, he launched himself off the edge of the rock, the rope tied around his waist, flapping out behind him. He sailed at least 5 meters out before his feet dipped into the water. But it was just enough, and his torso landed just beyond the edge of the faster-moving water, his backpack plunging down deep under the surface. His chest struck the sinking backpack hard, nearly knocking the wind out of him. He began to roll to his left and flapped his arms madly as he tried to right himself. After a few seconds of splashing, he managed to stabilize himself as the water carried him downstream. He began kicking his feet in earnest, trying to traverse the current before it carried him so far down the river that he might miss the shallows and end up in the deadly white water beyond. Will watched as Jack kicked and paddled with all his strength. He glanced down at the rope connecting him to Jack as it was pulled off the rock and into the water. Will began to brace himself for the tension of the rope, certain that Jack wasn't going to make it across in time. But after a few moments, Jack's downstream progress seemed to slow, and he began to make headway across the calmer waters.
"That crazy son of a bitch just might make it after all," he thought. "Swim, you crazy bastard! Swim!"
Jack clutched his pack under his chest, moving closer to shore with each kick. As he approached land, he began to paddle with his arms as well, rocking from side to side as his weight shifted with each successive stroke. Less than a minute after he had leapt into the water, Jack stopped kicking, slid his arms out of the straps of his pack, and stood up in the waist-deep water.
"Yes!"
he cried out as he held his right hand up in triumph.
"Yes!
Way to go, Jack! Way to go!"
Jack stumbled through the shallow water, dragging his pack behind him. The water grew shallower as he got closer to shore, until he was finally standing on dry land. Jack dropped his waterlogged pack onto the shore, untied the rope from his waist, and retied it around the nearest tree.
"Okay, Will," he called from shore. "It's your turn."
Will had been so excited by Jack's success that he had completely forgotten that he would have to do the same. And his recent experience with the water had not been very encouraging, to say the least. But, Will told himself repeatedly, there was no other choice. Will put his pack on backwards, just as he had watched Jack do only minutes before. Walking to the opposite side of the rock, Will kept telling himself that he could do this. Unfortunately, the rest of his body didn't seem to be listening. He stood there, frozen with fear, staring out across the surface of the rock at the flowing green water beyond. From his perspective, the distance across the first bit of fast-moving water seemed immense.
"Are you ready?"
Jack called from shore. There was no answer.
"Will, are you ready?"
he asked again. Will could hear Jack calling to him from shore, but he was unable to answer.
"Are you all right?"
"Yes,"
Will managed to answer meekly.
"Then let's do it."
"I don't know, Jack."
"What?"
"I don't know about this.
What's the problem?
I don't know.
Come on, Will, I did it.
In case you haven't noticed, Jack, I'm not quite as adventurous as you.
Sure you are, Jack assured him. Besides, it'll be easier for you.
How do you figure?
All you have to do is jump in. I can pull you in from here.
But can you do it before I reach the rocks downstream?
No problem, Jack promised. Trust me.
Stop saying that,
Will protested.
What?
Every time you say trust me, something goes horribly wrong.
Okay, don't trust me. Trust yourself.
Will still didn't move.
Come on, Will. You want to stay on that rock forever?
That still didn't move him.
What would your son think?
That was all it took. Will took a deep breath and broke into a clumsy dash across the uneven surface of the rock, letting out a half-hearted battle cry as he leapt from the rock and sailed across the water below. Much to Jack's surprise, Will flew even farther than he did, landing well past the rushing water. But unlike Jack, Will dove in head first, the force nearly yanking the pack out from under him. He came up with the pack under his waist as he floundered to keep his face out of the water to breathe. Within seconds, Will realized his predicament and shifted the pack back under his torso, stabilizing his position as the current carried him downstream. On the far shore, Jack quickly pulled in the slack left over from Will's amazing leap. He dug his heels deep into the soft shoreline as the drag of the current tightened the rope. Will began kicking like a madman, his arms flailing at his sides in a comical attempt to swim. It had little effect on his course, but the extra propulsion was unnecessary, as Jack was pulling vigorously from the shore, hauling Will in, little by little. A minute later, Will was splashing into the shallow water.
"Stand up!" Jack shouted from shore. "Stand up!"
Will stopped kicking when Jack's words sunk in. He looked about at the water around him. Finally realizing where he was, Will relaxed a moment, swinging his legs out to the side and letting them settle in the water directly beneath him, floating on his backpack. His feet bounced across the rocky bottom as he continued his lazy arc toward shore. Finally, he dismounted his pack, planted his feet firmly, and stood up, his arms slipping out of his pack as he rose. Will couldn't believe he had made it to shallow water. His pack, now out of his grip, bumped against his legs and circled around them, dangling from the rope between him and the shore.
"You did it!"
Jack congratulated him. Will stepped forward, grabbing his pack along the way, dragging it behind him as he carefully made his way to where Jack stood. Jack grabbed him with both arms in a powerful bear hug as Will stepped up out of the water.
"Jesus, Will, you should have seen yourself! Man, you flew further than I did!"
I did?
Will coughed in surprise.
"Hell yes! You launched like a rocket, my friend! Christ, and you dove right in! I mean, head first!"
Jack laughed.
"It was beautiful!"
Really?
Will was still dazed, refusing to believe he was standing on solid ground, safe from the raging waters that had nearly taken both their lives. He turned around to face the river as Jack released him from his congratulatory embrace. He watched as the green and white water flowed behind them, unchanged by their recent intrusion.
"Come on, buddy," Jack interrupted. "Let's pitch camp before it gets too dark."
Yeah, good idea.
"We need to build a fire and get dry before it starts getting cold," Jack added.
Jack opened his backpack to begin setting up their camp for the night. Slowly, Will turned back from the river and joined him.
"Hey, Jack?"
Will asked.
"Yeah?"
"Let's make that our last water adventure, shall we?"
"You've got a deal, my friend."